really thought that in Ames, like, these people, they have this knowledge. I thought it was going to be there. I thought, Story County, stick by your people, do it. And then I get the information that they, not so much, like, and it was very disheartening. But then Boone came back, and Boone's like, no, we oppose this for our people. You know, we got to protect our property, our watersheds, and our land. I sat there, I'm like, Boone! Yes! Who would have thought, you know?
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. Thanks for joining us. Today, we explore the question of the Dakota Access Pipeline from the Bakken oil fields of North Dakota. People both for and against the pipeline have their sights focused on the November 12th public hearing before the Iowa Utilities Board, a three-member panel appointed by the governor who is reviewing the pipeline application. This hearing will be held at the Boone County Fairgrounds in Boone, Iowa, next Thursday, all day 9 to 5. There is one day for public comments. This will be followed by 9 days of evidentiary hearings throughout the month of November, in which panelists selected by the Iowa Utilities Board will present information regarding the pipeline proposal so that the IUB can make its final decision about whether to permit this construction. In advance of that public hearing next Thursday, November 12th, today's show focuses on the Bakken Pipeline and particularly on efforts at the county level to pass resolutions both against and for the pipeline. You might call this the tale of two counties. But before we get to that, let's take a look at city elections in Ames. For those who haven't heard, Bronwyn Beatty Hansen defeated her opponent, Matt Converse, to win the at-large seat for the Ames City Council. Bronwyn, who was endorsed by the outgoing at-large council member Matthew Goodman, was considered the progressive candidate and ran a robust campaign starting back in the summer. And she won by 53% to 47% against Matt Converse. In the other race, the fourth ward, the progressive candidate Dan DeGeest was defeated by two-year incumbent Chris Nelson of Nelson Electric. Nelson received considerable campaign funding from local real estate developers, and that margin was larger, 59% to 41%. Okay, so it was the best of times and the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epic of belief. It was the epic of incredulity, the spring of hope, the winter of despair. This is more or less how Dickens' classic novel, Tale of Two Cities, begins, and it may well describe the feelings of opponents to the Bakken Pipeline in our listening areas in Story County and Boone County. And so we have the tale of two counties. Exactly 2 weeks ago, citizens from Boone who had spent the summer campaigning against the pipeline watched as the Boone County supervisors unanimously passed a historic resolution calling upon the Iowa Utilities Board, which has ultimate state authority on this matter, to reject the Dakota Access permit. And we have one of those supervisors here in the studio with us. Yesterday, concerned citizens organized by the League of Women Voters of Story County presented a much milder resolution to the Story County supervisors asking for a complete independent study of the pipeline's environmental and economic impact. They were turned down 2-1, with Paul Toot indicating his favor of the resolution. For the same meeting, the Midwest Alliance for Infrastructure, an alliance of commercial entities mostly centered in the Dakotas, had prepared a counter-resolution asking that the Story County supervisors urge the Iowa Utilities Board to approve the pipeline. The counter-resolution was presented by Eric Schmidt, a spokesperson from the Labor's International Union of North America, and actually received not that much attention from supervisors. So earlier in the summer, Story County supervisors had been faced with a more sternly worded resolution, something more like what Boone passed, and they dismissed that without a vote. In today's show, I wanted to cover these events from yesterday and to explore the success of Boone County activists in getting their point across to supervisors. So, as I said, I have in the studio with me Supervisor Tom Foster of Boone. Welcome, Tom.
Good morning, Greta.
And, Tom, can you describe briefly the evolution of your thoughts as supervisor on the Bakken Pipeline and how you and your colleagues came to take a stance that while symbolic is still one that no other county in the state has chosen to take?
Well, it came to be, for me, it was a personal thought with private property rights. I look at Dakota Access Pipeline. They're a private enterprise, and they're wanting to ship their product across Iowa to Illinois, anyway, to a refinery. And it just doesn't seem like it's right to use the eminent domain, taking a private property and the rights of private property to move their product across Iowa.
Okay. We have the voices from two of the activists who worked on the issue in Boone, Lahoma Simmons, a rural resident on 5 acres with her husband, and April Birch, married with 5 children, living in Boone proper. I sat down with them yesterday to hear their reasons for making this fight a central part of their lives this year. Let's start with the voice of Lahoma Simmons, who lives with her husband on 5 acres. They had received official notice that the pipeline would cut through their front yard. They started talking to neighboring farmers about what to do about it. And together, the farmers and she attended the first Dakota Access meeting in Boone.
That was a real eye-opener. Made my stomach drop. Come to find out, luckily, they're not going to come across my front lawn, but they are going to go a mile east of me into the cornfield there. But because that field has drainage tile, my pond that is right beside my house, maybe 7 feet away from my house, is part of that drainage from that field. And I have a lot of wildlife out there. I could just sit there in my living room and look over and I have life. That's when I started doing all like the research on pipelines and crude oil pipelines. This is not a natural gas pipeline. It's a totally different thing. It is a crude oil pipeline. Natural gas is higher refined gas. Yes, it is toxic and it has a chance for explosions, but it evaporates quickly once it hits the surface. And we have them all over Iowa. You know, a lot of people, you know, are starting to realize, oh, we do have pipelines and you should be totally for the pipeline. Well, this is a crude oil pipeline. Crude oil pipeline is thick. It's tar. And it has to be at a certain temperature for it to be liquefied and for it to be pushed through a pipeline. It has to be at so much pressure. So you're pushing this thick, crude sludge through these pipelines. And if it cools down anywhere, it could congeal, create a fracture in the pipeline or in a rivet. And once it gets out, it just kind of pools and it sits and it kills off everything.
Okay. So that was Lahoma Simmons, a rural resident of Boone County. Tom Foster, Boone County Supervisor. Lahoma talks about the tile drainage into the pond on her acreage. And I guess in the past year, with the Des Moines Waterworks lawsuit, county supervisors around the state, but especially in this Des Moines lobe, have really had to come to terms with the fact that they are responsible for managing this network of drainage tiles across their counties. Did this responsibility for drainage tiles play a part in your thinking?
It does. The state code indicates, or by default, the county supervisors are the trustees for the drainage districts. And in Boone County, we have a lot of drainage districts. As you said, we're in the Des Moines lobe of the Wisconsin Glacier. Those all affect drinking water, affects the Des Moines River, the Skunk River, the Squaw Creek watershed. It can also affect the newly being developed Beaver Creek watershed. A lot of surface water that drains into the aquifers. Also, lost my train of thought there for a second. wells. So it is a real concern, and we will be looking at adopting another resolution in regard to just the drainage districts. So it gives guidance, if the pipeline gets approved, gives guidance to installing their oil line or pipeline underneath the drainage districts and how they'll do that, how we'll respond if we need to get in and do some repairs, responsibilities of both parties.
That's interesting. So you're going to say this is our jurisdiction managing the drainage tiles or as trustees, and you're coming into our jurisdiction here, and you're going to have to play by our rules.
Right. We have to protect those drainage districts for the farmers and landowners. So that's a requirement. We want to make sure that the land is put back as best we can to the original condition. With regard to pipelines, again, we have several thousands of miles of pipelines across Iowa, most of them being natural gas. In talking with a lot of the landowners, and when they're out combining, they can tell you exactly where the pipeline is, because as they're combining across the field, they can watch their monitors on the combines, and they can tell you the yield will drop, and then when they get through that area, then it comes back up again. So there's certainly is an impact.
An impact on farmers. Well, water quality was also a primary interest of the other activist I spoke with yesterday, April Birch. She identifies herself as a fifth-generation Boone County resident. So let's listen to April.
I was pretty outraged when I heard about the plans, because these pipelines, they are not infallible. They pump highly corrosive crude oil at extremely high temperatures, and the issue at hand, a lot of people frame it in terms of rail versus pipeline. Well, I'll tell you, when you look at the statistics, you look at all of the data that's been gathered over the years, yes, there is perhaps a greater risk of immediate harm to people when you transport by rail, but no one's looking at the long-term risks of transporting by pipelines. The amount of crude oil that's released into the environment in a pipeline spill is easily 20 times that of what's released during a rail car accident. And that crude oil in Iowa immediately spills into our drainage tiles, which feed our creeks, our rivers, our ponds, right into our drinking water systems. And we don't know what the long-term effects of that will be. We don't know if we can even afford to clean up an immediate spill. Right now, there's a $250,000 surety bond requirement, and even a small spill would not be handled by a $250,000 surety bond. So it's terrifying to me. I have five children, my husband and I. We have a blended family with five children, and we'd like this to be a place where they can live the rest of their lives, where they can raise their families. And if the water becomes so toxic because of a short-sighted plan to pump crude oil out of state at no benefit to Iowans, then what kind of future are we creating for them? So that's why I became involved. I became involved this summer pretty actively in a plan to participate in the annual Puffer Billy Days Festival here in Boone. We were not allowed to participate in the parade for predominantly the reason that we were considered to be politically polarizing. So we weren't allowed to participate because the Puffer Billy Days parade does not allow political movements or hot topic issues, I believe is how it was phrased, into the parade, because it's a family parade. And all I could think was, this is a family issue. This is hugely important to families throughout the United States, not just in Iowa. So we decided to come up with an alternate plan, and we contacted private landowners along the route and were given permission to set up at 5th and Story. We had a booth where we tabled and gathered signatures from parade watchers. And from there, we had a group of about 15 people who marched down Story Street towards the intersection of Story and Mamie, and we had a demonstration where we shouted things like, no eminent domain for private gain, and we held up signs, and we got a lot of honks from people driving by and thumbs up, and from there we marched our cloth pipeline down Story Street to the main stage for Puffer Billy Days, where people were awaiting Trump's arrival for his speech, and we were able to stay there drumming and chanting for about 15 minutes before we went back. We had people of all ages with us. We had kids from 5 years old up to retirees in their 60s and 70s with us. Because this is an all ages issue. This concerns everybody. And it's not beneficial to the people who live here. I think that's the biggest thing that's really an issue right now. The Iowa Utilities Board has to make a decision on whether or not they're going to permit this pipeline to happen. And part of their responsibility is to the citizens of Iowa. This has to be beneficial to the citizens of Iowa. And yes, there are a few people who may receive temporary employment from this project. If you look at the report out of Iowa State, you'll see that there are anywhere from 500 to 1,000 people throughout the entire state of Iowa that might receive employment for 1 to 2 years. They've already contracted with companies out of Wisconsin to manage the pipeline pipe fitting work. So we already know that they're not contracting with companies in Iowa. So those companies are not beholden to hire Iowa workers. And Iowa may or may not have enough workers to do that kind of work. So it's a natural fit that they would pull people from out of the area. So for that kind of a short-sighted benefit, we are putting at risk our children's future. At this point in history, do we really need to be building additional infrastructure for transporting fossil fuels? Or do we need to be building infrastructure for alternative energies, wind energy, solar energy? I think it's outrageous that at this point in history that we would still be building new infrastructure, that we're still investing money in fossil fuel infrastructure, not so that we can make durable goods, not so that we can make things that are going to last. We're using these fossil fuels to burn. And it's mind-boggling that we would use what we have left of the fossil fuels, which are incredibly useful resources for transportation, that we would burn them.
Okay. So that was April Birch, an activist against the pipeline in Boone, Iowa. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm your host, Greta Anderson. And here with me is Tom Foster, one of three Boone County supervisors who unanimously voted in favor of a resolution urging the Iowa Utilities Board not to permit Dakota Access to build this crude pipeline across Iowa. So, Tom, were you at Puffer Billy Days?
I had a chance to stop by, but unfortunately, I missed their demonstration.
Yeah. I don't imagine that public drumming is something that happens often in Boone.
No, not really.
But it was interesting to hear, the complaint of a politically polarizing demonstration when the main speaker at the event was none other than Donald Trump.
Yeah, right. April brings up some good points, and one that I had a misconception. I would have believed that the oil line was the best way to transport oil. There's heavy expert testimony that indicates otherwise, that there's more incidents by the number of gallons of barrels of oil transported through oil lines. There's more incidents of oil lines erupting and leaking than there are with rail cars and semis, transports. I would have believed that probably it would just be 180 the other way around. So that was interesting.
And she mentioned the $250,000 surety bond. That must concern you as a supervisor.
It does. $250,000 is not a lot of money. Maybe 50, 75 years ago, that was a lot of money. In recent history, I don't remember of any oil spill that, even 10 times that would have covered it. I think most recently with British Petroleum, I think they're talking about $25 billion that they have spent in their cleanup in the Gulf. So I don't know. That $250,000 doesn't seem like very much. And when that law was enacted, that was many years ago. So that was maybe something that the legislature should take a look at and maybe update, kind of bring it up. Fine-tune that a little bit.
Yeah, and just to be clear, that's the amount, the dollar amount at which the pipeline company would be responsible for any cleanup.
Correct. I had asked one of our landowners in his negotiation with Dakota Access Pipeline for an easement across his mother's property, not his property, but his mother's property, And he indicated that he had asked them about the $250,000 surety bond, and what a, you know, that's not going to cover a cleanup. So what do you do after that? And he said, well, FEMA will come in and take care of that. Well, who is FEMA? FEMA is you and I and every other taxpayer in our country.
Okay. April emphasizes how little this pipeline will benefit Iowa and how the Iowa Utilities Board has a great responsibility to put the people of Iowa first. Later in the show, after you go and leave to attend your own supervisors meeting, we'll be hearing from the Story County supervisors who said that indeed this is the job of the IUB to protect the citizens of Iowa and that there is a process in place for reviewing the pipeline. They implied that having supervisors weigh in on the issue was not part of the process. And you and your colleagues obviously thought differently. Can you talk about your perceptions of the process and the governance for the pipeline approval in Iowa?
Well, I'm sure that there has to be some state agency, whether it be the Iowa Utilities Board or the EPA side of Department of Natural Resources, but someone should be reviewing this. We at the county level obviously don't have the authority to give a yay or nay, but I think expressing our opinion in regards to the safety of and welfare of our citizens is most important to me anyway.
Okay.
Our last meeting that we adopted that resolution, there was a gentleman there from a company that installs pipelines, and he felt that he was saying that he was sorry that we had to be objected to or subjected to the resolution and even should have to look at this issue. And I don't apologize for me. The folks in my county elected me to represent them, and I do that very respectfully. I mean, their thoughts are important to me. I'm there to do a job for them. They hired me.
Okay. Well, the issue of unions and union pipe fitting jobs is a major angle on this pipeline. And as you said, there were union representatives at the county supervisor meeting. How did you feel looking into those union members' eyes and saying, I'm sorry, but I don't think this pipeline is the answer?
Well, I'm very pro-union. I come from a background, a very strong union and family. So I understand their desire to have jobs. But it's been pointed out that once they come in and the pipeline is installed, it's in the ground, those folks get to leave and we're left with what's left. That brings up another issue to me, Greta, and that's at some point the Bakken oil fields are going to be used up. And being that Dakota Access Pipeline is a limited liability corporation, they get to walk away from it. The dinosaurs laying there in the ground for future generations to put up with. And you know, there's what are we going to do with it?
Dinosaur bones. I like that. Well, as I learned doing this story, pipe fitters are not the only union people who played a role in this debate. Let's listen to Lahoma again.
My father came up from Missouri and with the railroad and got on the CNW up here back in 73. So I am a Chicago Northwestern daughter. And then when I got out of the Navy, my husband got on the railroad as a CNW, and now he is working for Union Pacific Railroad as a locomotive engineer. So I'm kind of immersed into the railroad life. And with that being said, railroaders, this is their way of life. You know, they transport on rail, in cars, freight. Things are slowing down. There's another furlough. Union workers, union men, women are losing their jobs on the rail, being kind of put aside because there's not enough work to do. So that affects a lot of us. That affects, you know, families. And Boone is a big union town. I mean, this is a railroad town. And, well, farmers and railers, we kind of come together and we're this entity. And yeah, I understand the debate between pipeline versus rail car. And I know it's going to take jobs, decrease the number of jobs for our railroad employees. And these are permanent jobs. The railroaders, these is a permanent job. It's not a seasonal job. It's permanent. There has also been a change in the old rail oil cars are being pulled off the tracks and new ones are having to be made to hold crude oil. And it's all safety. It's a big thing, but that's providing jobs.
So they're investing in new equipment, new cars that are capable of handling this crude. They've already done that investment.
You know, they're changing out stuff, so it's change, and change takes time. Just like the thought process on the pipeline, it's immediacy. You know, people are demanding immediacy. We have to be quick about it. Well, it's only been a year, a little over a year since we got the paperwork that the pipeline wants to come through. There's a lot more that we need to think about, so we shouldn't be acting immediately.
You mentioned that the landowner adjacent to you, the person from whom you bought your land, will have the pipeline running through it. Did he go ahead and sign a contract?
No, they're totally against it. Most that I know of, a lot of Boone County farmers around here are against having the pipeline come in, so that's why they're a big fight. I know the Geppingers and stuff, they've been working hard on it with their lawyers. So a lot of farmers out here, a lot of landowners are saying, no, we do not want this. And it comes back to that eminent domain thing. Like, if the pipeline does get approved, they'll come in and claim eminent domain.
Yeah, on the way into town, I saw the big semi-truck trailer with the...
It just happened by chance that I saw him pull that semi into his field, and I just wanted to pull over and just get out and dance and do shimmy hugs all over the place.
But tell the audience what it says.
It says, stop eminent domain.
Abuse.
Abuse.
Stop eminent domain abuse.
And there are two. There's one on 30, and there's also one on 35.
And it's right there along with Stop the Bakken Pipeline. So we know that... We don't want it.
It does seem that Boone and Boone County are making a statement, a pretty strong statement.
I hope so.
And that was Lahoma Simmons along with April Birch, Boone County activists against the Bakken Pipeline. So last comments, Tom Foster. Lahoma talked about the composition of Boone as a railroad farming town. Do you think the railroad's role in the current system of oil transport played a role in galvanizing the community?
Possibly. Let me kind of back up here just a little bit. She made some mention about the railroad, and there's a misconception that all this oil is being transported on rail line, and we know that there's some by semi also, and that if the oil line was put in, that we would not have to use all these oil cars and the inventory of diesel engines and things like that to pull the rail cars. It is a misconception. We'll be able to then use that to haul more corn because there's corn sitting at some of the elevators. And that's the misconception is that's the belief. Anyway,
it's been said that if the pipeline goes in, there'll be more access of farmers to that transportation system
transporting
commodity.
Their commodities to market. And most of the corn that's produced in Iowa is consumed in Iowa. It's used by ethanol plants and also for animal feeds and food products. So the little bit of corn and soybeans that we transport goes to the river and then by barge on down to Louisiana. So that's kind of a misconception. Just a few years back, there would be a million carloads of coal a year going through Iowa to the fuel the light plants out east. And now we're down to about 300,000. So there's been a big layoff of the union members on the railroad net because of the lack of the need to haul coal to the east.
I see.
So, again, it's a misconception. The people are not educated that the idea that, that all this oil is being transported by rail and so it's using up the resources in regard to hauling corn.
Okay.
And does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I see your point. She's saying that if the pipeline goes in, there'll be even less traffic on the railroad for this crude, and that that will impact railroaders' jobs.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Well, again, any last words before you go?
Pleasure to be here with you today.
Thank you so much. Tom Foster, Boone County supervisor, voted with his colleagues unanimously to pass a resolution against the Bakken pipeline, urging IUB to deny their permit. When we come back, we'll hear the Story County supervisor's take on the League of Women Voters resolution, and we'll hear from someone who has been summoned as part of the evidentiary hearing before the Iowa Utilities Board. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, and that was The Ventures with the tune Pipeline. Different kind of pipeline, I think. Maybe a little more exciting. But our story today is the tale of two counties, Boone and Story, as regards their supervisors' responses to the proposal of Energy Transfer Partners out of Texas for a pipeline across the state of Iowa. Next week, the state body governing the decision on the pipeline, the Iowa Utilities Board, convenes a 10-day statewide hearing at Boone County Fairgrounds. Presumably, this is a centrally located place along the pipeline route. The first day of these 10 full days of testimony throughout the month of November will be a comment period for citizens. And at the end of the show, we'll describe the process for getting on the docket for that testimony. Now, on the phone line, we have one of the expert witnesses who will be called on during one of the later days of the hearings, November 30th, about the economic impact of the pipeline in Iowa. This has been a hotly contested topic, so we welcome to the show David Swenson, associate scientist in the economics department of the College of Agriculture at Iowa State University. Hello, Dr. Swenson.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. I need to make a quick correction. I'm not classified as an expert witness. That would mean I'm on somebody's side. I'm considered what's called a fact witness. I've been asked to just simply testify as to certain facts about the case. Okay?
Okay, great.
Okay, very good.
Energy Transfer Partners has put out a statement about the economic impact of the pipeline on Iowa. And did the Iowa Utilities Board kind of invite you to provide commentary on that statement?
Well, here's how it worked out. I initially saw this report, and I had issues with the report because, as reported, it overstated the likely job impacts that we were going to have in the state of Iowa. And so I developed some presentation materials and did a public presentation on this. At that time, I was asked by one interested party, in this case was the Sierra Club, would I be willing to sit for a deposition on what I had presented. So what I have is both what I presented and a deposition that was taken by the Sierra Club, but again, I'm not an expert witness for the Sierra Club. They're just the ones that asked me to take a deposition.
Okay, so can we get into a little more of the details
Sure.
of that, the debate or confusion about the job impact, the numbers?
Yeah, here's what happened. They reported 7,600 jobs would be created as a consequence of this pipeline, but the pipeline is going to occur, the construction period occurs over a two-year period, and they pretended in their study as if it was all magically going to happen in 1 year as opposed to 2 years. And so by doing that, they created the false impression of all of these jobs occurring in a one-year period, even though they're temporary jobs, they're occurring in a one-year period. our normal convention is to report jobs in the years in which they occur, not as if they all magically occurred in a one-year period. And so at the minimum, you would divide the job number total by two. And so again, at a minimum, the project would maybe support 3,800 jobs a year. 3,800 jobs in the first year of activity, 3,800 jobs in the second year of activity. And my analogy for this is, you know, I've been working at Iowa State University for 26 years. I do not count as 26 jobs. I count as one job doing it for 26 years. And so that would be the case with these construction workers. Working in year one is considered one job. Working in year two, still considered one job because it's the same worker. And so that was a distortion. It's a convention that's used by private economists and consultants basically to make a project look better. The second thing that they did, and this is important, they assumed all of the construction would be awarded to Iowa firms. We already know that the main prime contractors for construction of this project are non-Iowa firms. But anyway, by assuming all of the contracts would go to Iowa firms, the modeling system they used assumed that nearly all of the jobs would go to Iowa workers. But many of these large pipe construction firms are going to bring their own highly specialized workers. Some of their highest paid, highest trained, and most valuable workers will come along with this project. And then there will be subcontracts for Iowa construction jobs. So that part of the estimate was much too high. And then the third part they made a mistake in my opinion, is that they assumed that there would be pipes and other kinds of pipeline infrastructure actually manufactured in Iowa. Well, there is no firm in Iowa that makes this kind of pipe or the pumps or the joints or many of the other parts that are associated with this pipeline. And so that overestimated the impacts by 16%. So when you add it all up, in my opinion, it looks like they overestimated the job impacts by roughly 100%.
Oh, okay. And that is, you know, the construction workers, the temporary jobs. Is there a role? Will there be people who have permanent jobs overseeing the pipeline once it is installed?
Yeah, there will be. And that is a whopping 15 jobs. That's it. 15 jobs will be responsible for overseeing and maintaining and monitoring the operation of the pipeline once it's constructed. So it doesn't have a lasting economic impact. It's only economic impact. And I need to emphasize this. It is substantial during the period of construction, if indeed it gets constructed. But it's very temporary, and it only occurs. There are two things going on. It's temporary over a two-year period of time, and it's moving the entire time that it's here in the state of Iowa. It's not going to have any meaningful impact in any one area of the state. It's just going to be continually moving until the pipeline is completed. So permanent jobs, very small, just 15, using a multiplier that we use, at most 25 total jobs are supported in the Iowa economy once this thing is laid in the ground.
Okay. So you've described how a distortion of the economic impact statement or study that was done by Dakota Access. Just curious, do you know anything about the environmental impact study that has been performed and whether they will be calling witnesses who would have the other side? There was some concern at the Story County Supervisors meeting that the only environmental voices represented would be those of the pipeline itself.
No, I don't. I don't have any information on that.
Okay. Now, labor unions have been very outspoken in favor of this pipeline in terms of the job angle. And we heard from our Boone guests a different angle on jobs, the notion that railroad engineers make their living transporting freight, including Bakken crude, and that a slowdown in this traffic is could cause further furloughs. Does rail traffic and the jobs of railroaders figure into your analysis at all?
No, not at all. They don't do any kind of net analysis. And I'm a little bit critical of that. There's huge demand across many categories of rail traffic in the United States right now. that this would create a tremendous decline in railroad traffic. It would create a tremendous decline in railroad traffic, but that doesn't mean that that existing time and demand for rail services wouldn't be picked up by other kinds of things. For example, in the fall, we always have a shortage of rail cars, significantly because there's so many cars hauling ethanol and hauling crude. That maybe regularizes. So I don't think it's as large as perhaps they say it might be.
Okay. And I did talk to a couple of union representatives from the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and from SMART United Transportation Workers. Neither of them is taking an official position, although Jim Garrett of SMART said that they generally would argue that the best alternative for the transport of crude already exists with the more flexible infrastructure of rail. So just last comment, Dave, based on how the process has gone so far, what do you expect from the IUB hearing later in November?
Yes, what I expect from the IUB hearing, unless an extraordinary, powerful and persuasive opposition truly, truly materialize, and the big word there is persuasive, I don't know how it could be that the IUB won't approve this, but that's just me standing on the sidelines watching this. I can't possibly know how they're going to deliberate on this, but that's my sense.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dave Swenson, for joining us in this discussion.
You're welcome.
And Twitter users should look Dave Swenson up on Twitter. Dave is always sharing interesting economic data and perspectives on Iowa. And if you would like to be one of those people weighing in on the pipeline, there is one day of public comments, and then there are 9 days of this evidentiary hearing. The public comment day is November 12th. If you're available that day and you want to comment, you will need to call the IUB. And their number is 515-725-7300. And you'll need to call them during normal business hours. And you need to do that this Thursday and Friday, November 5th and 6th. To get on the docket. The number again is 515-725-7300, and I'll repeat that at the end of the show. We now turn to the second county in the tale of two counties. Story County supervisors yesterday rejected a League of Women Voters resolution that would, among other things, quote, strongly urge the Iowa Utilities Board to defer action upon the request by Dakota Access LLC to construct a pipeline pending completion and receipt of a thorough, independent, unbiased environmental and economic impact statement evaluating the positive and negative consequences of the proposed pipeline. So a few months ago, the supervisors of Story County rejected a more strongly worded statement of opposition. So there was some question about whether this requested action, an independent study of both environmental and economic impacts, was to come before the hearings, which start next week, or whether this would occur after them. The hearings presumably are an unbiased, independent study, and yet I think there's some lack of confidence, perhaps, about the reality of that independence. So about 15 people spoke against the pipeline and on behalf of the League of Women Voters resolution asking for an independent study. There were four landowners whose land would be affected by the pipeline. One was George Belitzos, who described how he and his husband had been working to improve the drainage of their property, restoring their property close to the river to prairie. Two people spoke for the pipeline, although there were around 10 pipe fitters in attendance wearing neon green union T-shirts. A couple of folks argued that the oil fields are slowing down. We heard Tom Foster make that point, and that this very disruptive project should not be hurried through, just to make that last buck possible. Also, it was pointed out that there will be one pumping station in Iowa for this pipeline to, again, increase that pressure so that the crude can be shoved along through the pipeline, and that this pumping station is in Story County. So we have an extra burden there, and possibly an extra risk. In response to all of this testimony, Supervisor Wayne Clinton had a very lengthy response, at least 15 minutes. We cannot play all of it. He made two points. The first was that there is a process in place. The IUB is hearing from citizens. The IUB is hearing an environmental impact statement from Dakota Access. And furthermore, whenever that pipeline has to cross a river, for instance, it must get a permit from the Iowa DNR. So with all of these processes in place, He saw no reason for Story County to act. His second point was a bit more esoteric. He said he was confused about what we might expect from an independent environmental impact study. Mr. Clinton himself did not know what an environmental impact study was, so he did some research.
So if you Google environmental impact, it certainly pulls up a statement by supposedly a noted expert in the field. And I'm going to share you some of the things that I found. And I'm going to quote from a Dr. Philip Gangulli, G-A-N-G-U-L-Y, who happens to be the assistant professor in the Center for Atmospheric Science, Indian Institute of Technology in Delhi, India. And then he first started, his first thing that drew my attention, he said the relationship between economic development and the environment. He contends that economic development and the environment are not compatible. Found that interesting. So then I read on further. He says, environmental impact studies or studies have to be undertaken in order to find out what are the possible impacts that might occur at a given site. Only once we have found out the possible impacts can we work out measures whereby these impacts may not adversely affect the site. So it kind of depends on which side of the aisle you sit. Then I come to the resolution, and then it says, whereby a thorough, independent, unbiased environmental economic impact statement. And this was a little troubling, because I wondered, how do you form this independent person? Who selects this body? Does members of the opposition group feel like that they want to weigh in and say, well, yes, we approve this person, or no, we don't approve this person? How do you judge what point of view they're going to take? Are you going to have people who have studied environmental impact and came up with harmful impacts to the environment? Versus people who look at it from the standpoint of economic vitality, additional job creations, change of our dependence on certain types of oil and fossil fuels, whatever. So it was really confusing for me when I looked at this to determine, well, where are we going to get this independent, unbiased environmental impact people who's going to do the evaluation? Where are they? Who are they? No one has identified these people. And so that's a concern. I heard the group also say very, and I tend to agree with them, that if you're only going to look at the environmental impact statement from the oil-producing group, maybe it is going to be skewed. That's probably not illogical. That man may have a lot of value to that. So if I'm the IAB, UB, looking at this, and I look at that environmental impact, I'm going to look at the people that is presenting this information to determine the credibility, I would hope, and not necessarily just rely on just the industry experts that supposedly is going to present this. Now, however, I don't know that for a fact because I'm not on that board. But if I was on that board, I would certainly want to understand, you know, who was presenting this environmental impact. So where I'm at right now, Mr. Sanders and Toot, is I'm at a quandary. Had this proposal come to us the first time, several weeks ago, I would be much more inclined to be supportive, but maybe tweaking it a little bit. Asking me as a board of supervisors to say to the IUB that you should halt the project right now until we get an independent one is somewhat problematic. First of all, I want to see, and I don't know if we will see, if the public will see, what is the environmental impact that's going to be presented as part of this project? the people that's been appointed to represent Iowa on this utility board, I think has a heavy lifting to do to assure that the safety and welfare of Iowans are utmost as this project moves forward. Now, whether they do so in the same manner, I don't know.
That was Supervisor Wayne Clinton of Story County. Supervisor Paul Toot then spoke.
I'm going to be a little briefer than Wayne because he's thought a lot about this. I've gone back and forth on this issue a lot. I appreciate the effort by everybody to come and speak today. I particularly appreciate the efforts by the landowners that are directly affected by this today. I'm a little bit troubled by the use of eminent domain. I looked at had our civil attorney look up the definition for me for public utility. I'm troubled by it, but that's not my decision to make. That's up to the Iowa Utility. I spent a lot of years in law enforcement. I know that if you go to trial with somebody, you can get an expert to say just about anything you want that expert to say if you write the check. I don't believe that this resolution, 1621, I don't believe that it's a bad idea. I don't believe that it's a bad idea to ask for somebody, and Wayne brought up a good point, who is that somebody going to be? That's not our business. That's not our determination. You know, I think a lot about how much impact is this resolution going to have. It's going to be filed, if we pass it, it's going to be filed with the utility board, along with countless other replies that they're going to get up until the period of this Friday. Wayne had some concerns on the wording in the resolution. And the only way that the wording is going to be exactly the way that we want it is if this board presented its own resolution. And we've not done that. I'm going to take a lot of the what-ifs out of this for me personally as a member of this board. And I'm going to make the motion that we support Resolution 1621 as it's presented to us today. So...
Okay, so after stating a lot of objections to the resolution, Supervisor Paul Toot did support it by making the motion there. But, however, no one seconded that motion, and Rick Sanders gave his opinion.
So I'll weigh in. I believe that $250,000 is woefully low. I think everybody involved, including the pipeline company, recognizes that that's woefully low. I hope that the Iowa Utility Board recognizes that $250,000 is woefully low. Greatly troubled by eminent domain, this board chose not to do a road project that would have drastically improved the road in Story County because we didn't want to go down the path of eminent domain. I like what Wayne said. I really wish that this resolution had come to us the first time back when I didn't feel like it was just a delay tactic. And at the end of the day, I remain where I was a few months ago, and that is we have a process in place, like it or not. Part of this process, I believe, is for the Board of Supervisors to hear our citizens and interested parties when they want to bring something to us. There are times that we need to take action and make a statement, and there's times that I don't feel it's appropriate. For me, this is one of those times.
And thus ends the tale of two counties. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. We started out the show with Tom Foster, Boone County Supervisor, and two activists from Boone and Boone County, Lahoma Simmons and April Birch. We then spoke by phone with Dave Swenson, economist at Iowa State University. Finally, we heard voices from the Story County Supervisors meeting. A reminder that the public comment session of the Iowa Utilities Board hearing is November 12th. If you wish to testify, you must call the IUB this Thursday or Friday during normal business hours, 8 to 4:30, at 515-725-7300. That number, again, 515-725-7300. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed. Thanks to webmaster Ron Carson for making that possible. Local Talk was engineered by Rick Morrison. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Pipeline by The Ventures. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.